Hello, I'm Rhea Blakey for Discovery Health. Our topic today is the treatment of advanced non-small cell lung cancer and the current National Comprehensive Cancer Network guidelines for care. We'd like to thank the National Comprehensive Cancer Network for accrediting and for collaborating with Discovery Health on the content of this program, as well as our supporters, Eli Lilly and Company and Genentech. Physicians and other healthcare professionals can earn free CME credit by registering online at discoveryhealthcme.com and taking the post-test. All the graphics and references from today's program will also be available online. It's easy to log on, take the post-test, and earn free credit for the program, so do it today. We're fortunate to have a distinguished group of experts in our studio today to talk about caring for patients with non-small cell lung cancer. Dr. David S. Ettinger, the Sidney Kimmel Comprehensive Cancer Center at Johns Hopkins, Baltimore, Maryland. Dr. Stephen J. Fagenberg, Fox Chase Cancer Center, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And Dr. Mark G. Criss, Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, New York, New York. Gentlemen, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you.
During the next hour, we'll describe new systemic treatment regimens for patients with advanced non-small cell lung cancer. We'll list criteria for selecting the best treatment regimen for select patients with advanced non-small cell lung cancer. We'll identify strategies to help decrease treatment-related side effects of systemic therapy for non-small cell lung cancer. And we'll describe decision-making paradigms for selecting palliative therapies in patients with advanced non-small cell lung cancer. But let's start with just how common non-small cell lung cancer is. How many people are affected?
Well, lung cancer is very common. About 219,000 individuals will be diagnosed with lung cancer, with 159,000 deaths. It's the most common cause of cancer deaths in both men and women. It makes up about 28% of all cancer deaths. Lung cancer itself is divided into two major types, non-small cell lung cancer, which makes up about 85%, and small cell lung cancer, which makes up about 13 to 15%. And even then, the non-small cell lung cancer is further divided into adenocarcinoma, which makes up about 40%, and then squamous cell carcinoma and large cell undifferentiated carcinoma.
We really can't talk about lung cancer without talking about smoking. And of course, I think we all support everyone not to start smoking, and if you are smoking, stop today. But the fact of the matter is, if everyone in America stopped smoking today, we would still have an epidemic of lung cancer for the next 20 years. So while it's really important to do that, it's still a huge problem, even if the smoking cessation efforts are perfect and work today. The other fact about lung cancer today in America is that while most people have smoked at some point in their lives, virtually three-quarters of the patients that develop lung cancer today have either never smoked or stopped smoking 10 or 20 years ago. So for them, they've done their job. They've stopped smoking. They've lowered their risk by that. But sadly, they still develop the disease. And these people need treatment, which is the topic of today's discussion.
Well, today we'll be talking primarily about advanced non-small cell lung cancer. But first, can you clarify what having advanced cancer means?
I mean, advanced lung cancer, this, putting it simply, is basically if there is disease outside of the thorax, if there's disease in the brain, if it has spread to the adrenal glands or liver or the bones, that's usually what we classify as advanced. Now, there are other stages where we talk about more early stage disease, which is usually treated by surgery, as well as locally advanced disease, which is also a combined treatment. But we're going to be mostly talking about advanced disease today.
Because we do not have a way of finding lung cancer early, there is no technology that can do that. The majority of people that are facing this illness have it discovered at a time when it already has spread outside the lung, and they would be considered in this category of advanced non-small cell lung cancer.
Well, today's show will include information about treatment guidelines from the National Comprehensive Cancer Network. And to use these guidelines, it's important for physicians to understand how they're created. Here's some background information behind the process.
The NCCN clinical practice guidelines in oncology are crucial to improving the quality of care for patients living with cancer. NCCN's guidelines program is considered the gold standard for oncology care in the U.S.
As an academic physician, I really value my participation on NCCN guideline panels, particularly to have the opportunity to interact with colleagues in a multidisciplinary setting to have an impact on the care of cancer patients.
The NCCN guidelines are developed by 44 panels of physicians whose expertise spans more than 100 diseases in the oncology spectrum. The guidelines are updated continuously with new data and recommendations by leading physicians and other clinicians from the 21 NCCN member institutions.
Since the goal is to provide the best outcome for an individual patient, we can achieve that only by looking at the entire course of treatment for that individual patient.
The most up-to-date guidelines can be found online at nccn.org.
As we cover different treatment options today, we'll be discussing some details about recent evidence to guide treatment. But first, what's involved in staging advanced cancer and evaluating the patient?
Well, for one thing, you stage a patient for two reasons. One, you want to develop the appropriate therapy for that particular patient. And two, you want to be able to give the patient a prognosis based on the stage. And staging goes from stage one to four, with stage one being the earliest and stage four being advanced disease. Stage one, usually surgery is the mainstay of that stage for test treatment, while in stage four disease, it's chemotherapy or targeted therapy. And usually the staging process consists of a history and physical examination, laboratory studies, and a whole host of scans, CAT scans of the chest and abdomen, and a PET scan or a PET CT scan. And then you want to, the scans may direct where you're going to biopsy a piece of tissue. Remember, any scans you get do not give you histology. That is, do not give you a pathologic diagnosis. If you do a PET scan can pick up inflammation, it can pick up cancer. It is not as specific as we would like it to be. So at the end of the day, tissue is the way to go, and tissue is the issue, no meat, no treat. In other words, you want to err on a side of what's curable. And you'd want to do the appropriate studies to prove one way or another, is that patient curable? Does that patient have early-stage disease or late-stage disease? And I think that's critical.
Doctors, there's also the issue of performance status. How do you use that information in planning for treatment?
The performance status is one of the simplest and yet the most accurate and important determinations that an oncologist would make. And it's simply a grading of how close to normal activity a person is able to lead their life. It's simply the oncologist saying, can you work at outside the home? Can you take care of yourself at home? Do you need to be in the hospital? And if you take that information, it's probably the single most important determination for which therapy is going to be right for a patient.
Well, once you've staged the cancer and done a thorough evaluation, is it better to make a long-term treatment plan or to go with the first step and then continue each step subsequently based on what you're finding?
If it's advanced disease, when you're talking about chemotherapy, since there are many options in that area, I think, again, although you can talk about long-term prognosis and what you anticipate, obviously you have to take it one step at a time because things can happen. Toxicity, you might respond to the therapy. So all factors have to be into come into play.
And I agree with that completely. It's really, you know, depending on the stage, depending on how significant the disease is, it is a case-by-case basis where some cases are very simple and some are much more complex, and you have a change in the performance status. You have a significant weight loss where you have to change what your treatment is. You have to change to being less aggressive.
Yeah, I don't think it's possible to have a long-term plan. I mean, cancer is such a complex illness affecting not just the person but everybody around them. And how a person responds to that treatment both in terms of fighting the cancer and to the effects on their normal life, is absolutely critical in deciding what the next step is. And you really have to look at how was that person affected before you can take the next step. So while many of us would love to have a 5-year plan and a 10-year plan for our lives, you really can't do that with cancer. You know, it's all about how the illness and the treatment affect you, and that then it dictates what the next step. I think Steve was exactly what he said.
And you want to talk about the multidisciplinary approach to the treatment, say, of advanced lung cancer? Is that common now?
Because cancer is so complex and because we have so many different ways of fighting cancer now, and in truth, we use many different ways to fight the cancer in every patient. So the standard of care today is what we would call multidisciplinary care or multimodality care, where from the time of diagnosis, you would have a surgeon, a medical oncologist, and a radiation oncologist, all of them evaluating your situation and coming up with what technique or treatment from their specialty could be best suited to you.
Yeah, I think the other important thing is, other than three individuals that are MDs, the other important people here are the nurses, the pharmacist, the nutritionist, the social workers, the psychologist. I mean, they all play a role at one time or another with the care of the patient, and we shouldn't lose sight of that. I think that's extremely important.
Mm-hmm. Well, before we go into detail about choosing treatment, are there any new systemic treatment options that are available? Dr. Ettinger?
Yes, I think the biggest question now is does histology matter? Because now we have therapies that work better in one histology, for example, adenocarcinoma, than in non-adenocarcinoma. And actually, in the NCCN guidelines this past year, the combination of cisplatin and pemetrexate has been added to the guidelines in good performance status patients who meet the criteria, and the major criteria is that you have an adenocarcinoma. And I think this is an extremely important advance, and the reason it is an advance is because the studies have shown that the survival with this regimen is longer compared to another regimen in patients that have adenocarcinoma. And the toxicity, the original study was comparing it to gemcitabine cisplatinum, and not only was more effective in adenocarcinoma, but of interest, it was less toxic.